Good morning. Our guest today is on the phone, but he will be in the area locally a little later in the week. And we are going to be talking today with John U. Bacon. He is going to be talking in Pigeon for the Pigeon Rotary Club, which is going to have a special program this Friday. John, I want to thank you for being with us today.
Craig, my pleasure. Thank you.
First of all, you're coming to Laker High School Auditorium, and that is going to be Friday from basically, as I have it here, from noon until roughly 3 o'clock. And you're going to be speaking on leadership to the Rotary personnel and that want to be there and pretty much anybody else who wants to attend.
That's exactly right. We've got, I think, about 50 seats left out of 400, so we've done very well with attendance, local students, millennials, employers, teachers. The list is broad, and Jeff Leprand and others have done a great job getting folks out, so I'm looking forward to that.
We're going to be talking about leadership at the seminar. I was just wondering, to start things off, is there anything such as a natural-born leader, or is it more of a skill that you learn either from your parents, teachers, or others as you're growing up?
I think a bit of it might be quote-unquote natural-born in terms of, you know, more outgoing personality perhaps, things like that. But I know plenty of shy people who become very extroverted and great leaders. I think it's more taught than it is innate. And we'll talk about teaching that, of course, on Friday. And one thing great leaders do, I know, is they steal a lot of good ideas from other great leaders. And I've written 4 books now on leadership, and I'm happy to share these secrets with everyone there on Friday.
Okay. Is leadership changing? Does it have to evolve with today's culture and such? Because we grew up with the railroad barons and stuff, and nothing like that would seem to fly today.
That's exactly right, Craig. I mean, I grew up in an era, and perhaps you did too, that if my dad said so, that was kind of the end of the conversation, ditto any teacher or coach. Now, when you're leading somebody in their 20s, 30s, they expect to be involved in the process. They expect to have things explained, not just dictated, as you and I were discussing off the air. So that has certainly changed. But I think one mistake people make when they're trying to lead millennials is they try to make it too easy, too soft, and kind of at their mercy. I think that millennials are up for the challenge. And you look at the Navy SEALs, one thing I said to my high school hockey team, which I coached here in Ann Arbor, is that the Navy SEALs, you know, everyone else complains about the weather, the Navy SEALs brag about it. So let's get the Navy SEAL attitude. When you give them a challenge, they get inspired. They want a challenge. They want to be pushed. They're willing to be pushed. And when you think about your favorite teachers, Craig, whenever I've asked this question from Sao Paulo to Vancouver, not one person has ever said their favorite teacher was soft or easy. Think back on your favorite teacher, your favorite coach, and one of the first things they're going to say is the guy was demanding, but he or she cared about us, and that's the second part of the equation that can't go away.
People think of being the leader as being the one in charge, but there are different levels of leadership in most organizations, isn't there? You'd have the like in a business, you'd have the CPO, and then you'd have upper management, middle management, lower management, and then the workers, and each one is still using leadership skills, just at their own place in the company.
Exactly right, Craig. If you had a situation where it's all one guy, and everyone else follows the great leader, you're probably going to fail. You need layers of leadership, layers of responsibility. So it's not just one guy telling 100 people what to do. It's one guy helping to lead 5 vice presidents, perhaps, and then those people, of course, lead the next layer. So everyone knows everyone else's role, and people know what's going on. One of my jokes that I'm sure to retell on Friday is that on my high school hockey team, we had a name for people who led by example, and we called them sophomores. All that means is you know your job and you do your job. As a junior, I want you to know your job, do your job, and know everyone else's job. As a senior, I want you to know your job, do your job, know everyone else's job, and be able to help them do their jobs better. So it was not just coming from me as the head coach. It's coming from seniors, captains, assistant coaches. The layers of leadership were throughout the organization, and that's how I think great organizations work. From Walgreens, I've done a book on them, the Walgreens drugstore chain, to Cirque du Soleil, the crazy Canadian acrobats, to Michigan football. The lessons are very similar.
And basically, a lot of this is not just telling people what to do, but listening.
We'll have a section on that, too. Good insight, Craig. Bo Schembechler, I'll tell this story on Friday. Bo is a former coach, of course, at the University of Michigan from 69 to 89. He was a tyrant. He could be loud and bombastic, big, tough personality, no question about it. Bo was a shockingly good listener, and that's how he got buy-in from his players. When they had a problem, they did not have to make an appointment with the secretaries. They did not have to come back the next day. Bo would see them at that moment without any explanation for as long as they wanted to talk. And whether they were an All-American or a third-string walk-on, Bo would come out of a meeting to talk to them for 15, 20 minutes. And that kind of listening, as Colin Powell, the famous general, said, when your people quit bringing you their problems, you quit being their leader. So it's vital that we listen to people and their problems, and that's how you get buy-in.
Well, it's also vital to get different opinions on things. I heard this saying, it must be decades ago, and I wish I could attribute it to whoever said it, but the thing that struck me when I heard it was, if you have two people doing something and they agree on everything, one of them is useless.
That quote comes from Wrigley, the gum magnate from 70, 80 years ago or so, and you got the quote right. He said, if two people in business always agree, one of them is unnecessary. So if you don't want a diversity of opinions, don't hire anyone else.
But I mean,
you're going to get it. Now, you don't always have to agree with them. You don't always have to do what they say, mm-hmm. but you have to listen. And oftentimes you get a better idea by people sitting down and working that out. We're going to do an exercise on Friday afternoon, a version of brainstorming. It's a ton of fun. It takes only 3 minutes, but it shows you how collaboration works under pressure. And the results you get from collaborating are so much better than from just doing it by yourself, and we'll demonstrate this on Friday. It'll be a lot of fun.
Well, that's the difference between a leader and a dictator. A leader, people want to work for and because they feel their input is being heard, and the dictator, people are looking to find a way out.
Exactly right. And on that point, too, if I'm going to try to dictate terms to 100 people, they're going to very quickly turn against me, and now it's adversarial. Now they're going to spend a good chunk of their time making it look like they're agreeing with me while actually undermining what we're trying to do. And once you get that dynamic set up, Craig, it's very difficult to get that stopped. So you are completely right that you want the buy-in, you want the involvement. CEO of Walgreens Drugstore, Dan Jornt, who basically built the modern chain into 10,000-plus stores from 500 stores, one of his great lines is service leadership. He answers the phone, and the first thing he says is, Dan Jornt, how can I help you? He's the CEO, the former CEO, and his first question is, how can I help you? If I help you, then you'll do a better job. If you do a better job, Walgreens will do a better job. So that's how you do it.
You wanted to talk about motivating millennials, because a lot of businesses today have people coming in, and they just seem like a whole different breed.
They do, and this has actually become one of my more popular speeches talking about motivating millennials, because it is driving corporations crazy, teachers, coaches, you name it. They're getting kind of a bad reputation for being lazy, self-centered, always on Facebook and all this stuff. And some of that might be true, no doubt, but I think if that's the case, then we've not asked enough. My experience coaching high school hockey in Michigan in Ann Arbor, as well as teaching at the University of Michigan, at Northwestern University in Chicago and Evanston, and Miami of Ohio and Oxford, Ohio, has been very positive and has been the opposite. But as my mentor told me, Al Clark at Culver Academies in Indiana, about coaching hockey, he said the first thing you have to do is to make it special to be on your team. And the best way to make it special is to make it hard. And the 17-year-olds responded to that. The Navy SEALs have still got a wait list. It's very hard to become a Navy SEAL. And why is it attractive? Because it's so hard. So the goal there is to raise the bar, not lower it, to inspire people to come out for your company, for your team, for your class.
Well, when you raise the bar, you're raising the prestige that goes along with that accomplishment.
Exactly. Look, if you want to be a New York Yankee, you can't wear a beard. And if you want to wear a beard, go ahead. You can play for the Florida Marlins and finish last. But if you want to be a Yankee, that's what it takes. And it seems to me that the Yankees have gotten pretty much everyone they want despite that rule, maybe because of that rule.
Well, it also helps that they have money and they can build a winning team as well. I mean, there's a little bit there, too. Couldn't hoit. But you are going to be talking for several hours. Is this something that just goes straight through? Does it seem to go much quicker than people think, or do you have to take a break in the middle?
Oh, we do take a break in the middle, but it will go very fast. Trust me. The first hour is laying out the goal that I've been given from Jeff Leprent and others about this organization, what Pigeon is trying to do, and bad acts the whole area pretty much, with the young people as well as the future of the community. We'll lay out the challenges, we'll lay out the strengths that Pigeon clearly brings to the table, the thumb area, and then we'll talk about how to get that done in the first segment, about how to motivate millennials, how to set goals that work, how listening actually does work in the workplace. And then in the second segment, we'll take a brief break there. Second segment, we'll get into the exercise I talked to you about brainstorming and have them compete with each other. It'll be a lot of fun in teams. At last 3 minutes, it's fun, it's funny, it's quick. And trust me, this 2.5-hour session with a 15-minute break in the middle, it will go very, very fast.
You mentioned goals, and I was just wondering, do people often just overshoot for the moon rather than maybe doing short-term goals that add up to that later on and is more of a way to success, similar to like doing a New Year's resolution? You go slowly with weight loss. You don't say, I'm going to do 50 pounds in a month, and then you work towards what you ultimately want, but do it through a series rather than one big goal that seems unattainable.
That's a good insight there, Craig. You need the big goal to have something to motivate you, a North Star, to get you motivated. But if all your goal is to lose 50 pounds this year, you're not going to do it. I can tell you that right now. You got to break it down into manageable chunks week by week. How are you going to do it? It's also important, and we'll get into this specifically on Friday, when you're setting goals, to make them attainable, as you said. Don't shoot for the moon. My goal is not to be president this year. It's probably not going to happen.
Well,
so
not for 3 years yet.
Unrealistic goals. Make them realistic. Make them numerical. Make them objective. In other words, here's the number now where I am, and here's the number where I want to go. Whether it's your income or your weight or whatever else you're trying to measure, you got to measure it. And third, you have to make it public. Public goals happen a lot better than private ones do. You feel accountability toward other people. And finally, there's got to be a reward for getting it and a punishment for not getting it. And if you do all those things, you're probably going to succeed. When you consider how you basically train a dog, what do? You have to be consistent. The dog comes in, you get rewarded for one behavior, you get punished for another behavior. The dog can figure it out in about 6 months, Craig, so I'm sure we can too.
Is one of the keys to being a good leader how well you take your failures? Because there are a lot of things in life you can't predict that are unknown as you're setting your goals and stuff, that, rather than being angry and frustrated and taking it out, you just turn around and you make a new goal, as opposed to the other route, which would alienate people.
Exactly. And you ask very good questions, Craig. You've given this a lot of thought. Setbacks, I hate to tell you, folks, and we already know this in life, are probably the rule more than the exception. You're going to lose a lot of games on the way up. A lot of jobs are not going to go your way. You might throw out 50 resumes and get, five interviews if you're lucky in some cases. Clearly that has got to be a thing we learn how to get over. Here's what we do. We focus intensely on what we are sending out. My resume, my cover letter, for example, how I come across in an interview, and then you can't worry about what comes back. That's someone else's situation, but you always keep 3 or 4 balls in the air. So you're never dependent on one job coming back or one interviewer liking you. Try to get 3 or 4 balls in the air at once, and that way things look a little bit different. Handling the setback, you got to understand that that's going to happen. But as long as your goals are clear, you will keep going.
And I've heard that people often learn more from their mistakes.
There's no question about that. Losing hurts. Losing burns a little bit. Bo said, if we ever lost a game, Monday practice was always great because they were more upset than I was. And when you're winning in some cases, it's actually harder to stay focused than when you're losing. Because when you're winning, you take a lot for granted, you start believing your own press clippings, and if you're not careful, you'll get knocked off. So losing does tend to focus the mind on the task at hand. So long as you don't take it personally, and you learn how to break it down and say, okay, what went well, what didn't, how close are we, and what needs to change to make this happen? If you keep taking that approach, you're going to get there. It's just a matter of chipping away. And one distinction I would make here, Craig, is the difference between being patient about behavior and patient about results. If you're trying to turn something around, you've got to be patient about results. It's not going to happen overnight. You don't have to be patient about behaviors. people showing up on time, dressed appropriately, ready to work, whether it's a classroom, your baseball team in Pigeon, or an employer. All those things can happen on day one. Behaviors, we will be impatient about. Results, we will be patient about.
Because often results tend to be a learning process in and of themselves that take
time.
Exactly
right. And you're never, I mean, if you can achieve your results in a week, it was not much of a goal, was it? So you have to assume some losses are going to be there along the way. So how do we overcome those? We stick to our behaviors.
Are there keys leaders can use to pick the right people? Because that seems to me to be one of the most important things a leader does, is pick the right people for the right jobs.
I got a section on this, too. We'll talk about on Friday, how to hire better and fire less. And the key there is to hire more slowly. We tend to hire people based on a cover letter, an application, a half an hour interview. That's not much data. And the problem is it's very hard to fire someone these days. So if you hire the wrong person, and you're probably going to be dealing with that person for 6 months, a year, before you can move them on. So that can be a real problem. I would urge all employers to slow down, consider the process, do more interviews, more references, more looking into their background. If you can, and most jobs will allow this, if you can, try to give them a tryout on the job for a month or two to find out if they can really do the job and question, because you really don't know until they're doing that job. So my advice there is to slow down the hiring process to make sure you get the right people, and therefore you're going to fire less.
Does it become more difficult, though, in our litigious era that, you know, if you give somebody, you look for references and they give you a bad reference, people go back after their old employer?
It is a problem, and it's a real problem, no question about it. That's why the better ones tend to be done over the phone, or they can be more candid, and nothing's in writing. So that tends to be a better way of doing it. It's still an issue out there, no question about it. But the more you have a relationship with the person you're talking to, and the more calls like this you make, the easier that's going to be, and the more trust they're going to have in you to be candid.
Okay, I know you have to leave at 10:30, but I just wanted to, is there anything else you want to let people know about coming up Friday?
How to sign up. I think we've got about 50 seats left out of 400, so we're going to have a packed house there, going to be very nice. And the website is RotaryLeadershipSeminar.com. RotaryLeadershipSeminar.com. They did a great job with the website. Looks fantastic. Very easy to sign up. And trust me, it'll be a lot of fun. Doesn't cost very much. And we'll have a rock and roll time on Friday.
And there's also group rates, as I understand it. So if you've got a bunch of people coming from an organization or town or whatever, they can all get together and maybe save a little.
Exactly right. And the good deals are out there. So check out the website, and you'll get some discounts as well.
Well, I thank you for taking time with us today. I see you're going to have at least a pretty good turnout. You got a few seats left, and hopefully we can get the word out here today and maybe fill some more of them. And I wish you well, and I hope you enjoy your time up here in the Thumb.
I always do. I've been up there a few times to Bad Axe and elsewhere for speeches and other events. And we've already got a very strong crowd. I think we're going to finish it off by packing the place. So thanks for your help, Craig.
Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you.
Our guest today on the program has been John U. Bacon. He is coming to Pigeon for the Pigeon Rotary this coming Friday, Laker High School Auditorium, the location, and it will run from noon till about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. There are still some seats left. If you want to check out the availability, you can go to RotaryLeadershipSeminar.com. You can sign up right there online. It'll show you the prices and everything else. Coming up at the top of the hour, we will clue you in on all the latest in the news. Just keep it here at WLEW.
From tight-fitting jeans to trashy women to the angel in my eyes and daddy's little girl, all the ladies keep it tuned to 1340 WLEW. Drink RC, no real coke, but our neighbor had a pool. We got-
let's make a deal. I guess it just got real.